It is time for Pet Files. Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice. Traditional small animal medicine and surgery, chiropractic, laser therapy, acupuncture, and Chinese herbal medicine. 518-789-3440, MillertonVet.com. With us today, Dr. Carolyn Cannon, founder and co-owner of Millerton Vet. I'm pretty sure I did that right. How are you, Dr. Cannon?
I'm well. How are you, Jill Goodman?
I am. One day I will tell you about my adventure coming in to do this show, because it's just unbelievable. But for today, I'll just ask regular animal-related
questions.
Well,
that sounds exciting.
Oh, it was so exciting. It was so exciting. And usually, you know, I'm in a pretty good mood about things, but this, I have to tell you, it's a teeth grinder. Nevertheless.
I'm glad you made it.
I am too, because that meant I got to talk to you. Now, first and foremost, even though this is not one of the official questions, which is going to be about Leo the Husky, a long time ago, in a show from very, very, very far away, because I remember the question, somebody literally asked you about this thing called Pretty Litter, which mm-hmm. they are advertising up a storm now. And they've got a nice little girl in it. I mean, little, like 10 or 11, and it's like the kitty litter doesn't smell, and it's white, and it makes little different colors depending, and it's... And I don't know if you've ever seen it, but it's now been around for a few years. And I am wondering what's wrong with, like, regular litter. No. What I'm wondering is there any benefit to having a litter that turns a different color depending on what your cat's pee is like? And what do you do for people who, like, don't have a clue anyway? What does that mean? No, seriously. Because it's like, okay, so it's a pretty color. Where are we at here?
So pretty litter is for monitoring, I believe it's for monitoring pH of the urine.
Yeah, probably, but they're selling it like it's regular, you know, chips.
Yeah, so what we want with a carnivore is acidic urine, okay? So when the urine is acidic, then it keeps bacteria at bay, so we have lower numbers of bacteria. And so animals who overgrow, for instance, E. coli in the bladder. So, you know, you can get bacteria in the urine for sure. It's called bacteriuria, and it doesn't necessarily mean that you have an infection. So an infection means the bacteria have actually organized and taken over some activities in the wall of the bladder, okay? So it is... And a more acid urine will keep magnesium ammonium phosphate crystals in solution instead of precipitating them out. So if you have a very alkaline urine all the time when you're a cat, you're going to precipitate crystals and cause irritation in the urinary tract, which is all about this, you know, feline lower urinary tract disorder, which is blocked cats. What people all know about, you know, cats
right.
peeing around the house and getting blocked up and blood in the urine and all of that. So I think the idea behind this is to, with particularly, I think, with cats who've had the problem before, is to try to detect chronically alkaline urine, or it also detects blood in the urine. So you can see blood with that irritation of the bladder.
Right.
And so
I'm just wondering why it's being marketed as a regular litter.
Well, I think that you know, if you can sell something, then you want to try to sell it to everybody.
All right. So that was okay. So
the difficulty is that everybody gets what's called an alkaline tide to their urine after they eat.
Right.
So sometimes, well, I get pH of a cat who has no crystals and is perfectly normal, who's got a pH of 9.
Right.
And it's also. I think if people did better feeding their cats and fed them less, fewer carbs and more meat protein, that we would have a better alkaline urine and we wouldn't have to worry about it. But that's for another day.
Right. And it's also for another, you know, the comedy is that because it involves, you know, marketing to kids, the mommy, get the litter that has the, that turns colors. It's going to be very disappointing when your normal, you know what I'm trying to say is you don't really want the rainbow coalition here. You just want your cat to pee normally in the box. End of story.
Yeah, yeah. So it can be helpful for particular instances, but I'll bet it's pretty darn expensive to use on a regular basis.
Yep.
Every day for multiple cats.
All right. Yeah. Well, thank you very much for that side note. We finished
sure,
the show.
I hope that helped. I hope it was understandable.
It was completely understandable. You ultimately, your diplomacy was overridden by your common sense. So I really appreciate that.
Okay.
All right. Moving on to Kristen and Andrew in Gatlinburg. We had a scare recently when our husky Leo had a bout of leptospirosis and kidney failure as a result from drinking what the vet called bad water. Leo came through, although he's now supposed to eat only a low-protein diet. In the panic of the whole situation, I have to admit we did not get super clear information, and both my husband and I really like to have all the facts from a reliable source. That's going to be you. So can you explain the relationship between kidney disease and bad water? Why are we now feeding Leo this expensive special diet? And what would be warning signs of it happening again?
So that's a great question, a great bunch of questions.
Actually, yes.
Because leptospirosis is something that is has become, in my career anyway, my last 33 years, has become something that we recognize more. I don't know whether it's more common, but definitely is recognized more as a disease. Something can potentially be prevented with vaccination and prevented with treatment if it's caught early enough. So leptospirosis, the bad water reference is meaning water that is contaminated with the leptospirosis bacteria, which are spirochetes. They're little spiral bacteria. And there are bunches of leptospirosis, different types. There are hundreds of them, but there's only about 10 that cause disease in animals and people. And we can only vaccinate. There's only a vaccine against 4 different kinds. So we can do our best in trying to vaccinate against those 4 different kinds. If you're going to vaccinate your dog against leptospirosis, then you definitely want something that has all 4 serovars that are possible in it. And the vaccine does offer pretty good protection. The way that animals get this is that it's transmitted between animals. So you may have wildlife, and now we know that rats carry leptospirosis also. And so these animals are urinating on the land and in the water. The urine can contaminate the soil, and then the rain comes down and gets hold of these bacteria, and then the rain can contaminate the water supply. And so it is potential that especially standing water, but running water too potentially, can carry these infective spirochetes. And so your dog might get them from swimming. So you can get them through little cuts in the skin. You can get an infection, and also by ingesting that bad water, which is basically bacterial contaminated water. It is not something that is rampant, you know, so I think there has to be a certain susceptibility to getting infection. Certainly you don't want to let, and there are open wounds on the body, and drinking a lot of it from standing water, from puddles, from stagnant ponds, probably not a good idea anyway. Vaccinating can really help to prevent this disease. And most of the serovars or types that are important do affect the kidneys, so they can cause kidney failure. Some of them cause liver disease as well, but mostly they affect the kidneys. They can also, urine from one dog can contaminate another dog and contaminate people, so can transmit the disease to humans, you know, if you aren't careful about good hygiene. And so it is an important disease in dogs, and it's an important disease in potentially in humans. It can affect the kidneys, and if it's not treated soon enough, kidney damage. So that's what I'm assuming has happened with Leo, is that there's some permanent kidney damage. And when the kidneys don't have the capability to deal with all of the protein in the diet that we normally would eat, then we need to adjust the diet, depending on the amount or the extent of the damage to the kidneys.
So that would
that's happening with Leo.
Okay, so then he would. So that's why he has to stay on the
a special expensive diet. That basically the idea is to try to get longer life from those kidneys. We all only have a certain number of nephrons, which are the little units in the kidneys that help us to filter everything through, and people and dogs have more than cats. That's why one of the reasons why we see more problems with cats as they get older, is they don't have as many nephrons. And so if you just destroyed a third of the nephrons in your kidney, then you need to take special care of the rest of them. And so that's where the diet comes in, where it needs to be high quality protein, meaning all the amino acids, but a lower amount of protein.
Okay. And is there anything natural that can be done diet-wise, or is that so hard?
Diet-wise, so the disease can be treated, has to be treated with antibiotics. As far as diet goes, you can feed a homemade diet. You just have to have it formulated by a veterinary nutritionist. And there are nutritionists out there who do that, and they do it remotely, usually. And it is expensive, but in the big scheme of things, if you're talking about maybe a $500 to $800 bill for several, usually it's follow-up visits, et cetera, with the veterinary nutritionist, but they're formulating a diet for you so that you can home cook real food and feed your dog that way for the rest of its life. So that's something that potentially is worth it, especially considering the cost of the kidney foods. And you have to consider, are you willing to make it? There actually is a company now. There's a guy named Paul. I've forgotten his last name, but there's a company now that will make any diet for you. They'll have it formulated, or you can give them the diet. They'll put it together and make it and freeze it and mail it to you. But it's super expensive to have somebody do that.
But what is interesting about that is going back to what's being advertised. The farmer's dog is, I would like to know, what is funny is what people are willing to spend money on and how much money they're willing to spend on it, she said, after coming back from the supermarket for something that was, that was once overpriced at $7 is now ridiculous at $16, and it's only shrunk, right? So
exactly. Smaller amount in a smaller package.
For double. So with that in mind, there's still a group of, when it comes to feeding their, quote, fur, when it comes to feeding their fur family, they are willing to spend money. And I'm wondering how, just relative to something like the farmer's dog, which sells itself as, it is specially formulated for your pet. And if you don't have the wherewithal to, this whole delivery thing where people don't make their food anymore, they just like want it delivered. If you don't have the wherewithal to make it, maybe that's not, maybe Paul's really onto something here for a generation, basically.
Right, for people who can afford it.
Yeah.
Yes.
But also for people who aren't going to do it but want that, because one of the things that I'm, in my dotage that I'm really learning is that if you can do this with food, you're better off. If you can fix something with food.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and that's what we work toward is, you're going to maybe give this medication, this supplement for a while. You're going to maybe give, Pepcid for 2 weeks while we're changing the diet, and then we hope to get them off of it, not long-term medications. If you can do it with diet, absolutely, that's the way to go.
All right. So maybe that's something that they would want to pursue. When people are doing single protein, buying that food's expensive anyway. As they put in the question, this expensive special diet.
It is expensive, but it's called Paul's Custom Pet Food.
Okay.
And from what I understand, it's even more expensive, but I'm not sure because I've never done it myself. So it's something to check out if you are interested in that and you have a dog who needs a prescription diet and you don't want to, and you want to use whole foods, and you don't want to make it yourself.
All right, that's a good one. That's a good one, and I think that I'm going to consider this that you are a reliable source, and you have given all the facts. So we're going to move on to Vance in Adams, who is asking, why do basset hounds always seem to have eyelids that are kind of drooping down in red? It looks painful and like it would get infected. Is it contagious or is it a genetic thing?
The eyelids that are drooping is genetic, of course. So these dogs have more skin than they really need to have, and they have loose collagenous connections in the skin, so the skin droops. And so their skin underneath the eyes droops down. It really was done on purpose. It's part of what makes them cute and engaging, I think. But what happens is that conjunctival tissue, that tissue on the inside of the eyelid, really was meant to be covered up and protected and not exposed to air and bathed in secretions all the time and not have exposure to the sunlight. And so that's what happens. It's called an exposure conjunctivitis. And there is surgery that can correct that. Most people don't have that done. But there are some ointments that are pretty natural that will help just to reduce the inflammation. But you do have to put them in every day, even a couple of times a day, excuse me, to help prevent that exposure conjunctivitis from becoming an infected mess.
Right.
Some dogs do seem to do fine, and they don't even produce a lot of discharge. And other dogs, it seems to me that it's got to be uncomfortable. But
right.
I can tell you that most basset hounds don't rub at their eyes.
Okay.
So it's hard to know. It's hard to know how much they're actually, feeling as far as discomfort goes. But if it's really severe exposure, then surgery to tighten up at the corner of the eye, to remove some of that skin and tighten it up, is probably the way to go to prevent that. But there are eye ointments made now. Optics Care makes them nice. It doesn't have any drugs in it that really soothe the eyes, but it does have to be put in. So commitment.
For one thing, we can't even really tell. Vance doesn't even say that he's got a basset. He's just like, "Why? Hey, veterinarian, why is this?" So we don't even know if he's got one. But
it's not contagious. It's not a contagious conjunctivitis in most cases.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Ellen in Kingston. Ever since I was a girl, I've had Persian cats, and I was considering another one now that my oldest gal has passed away. But my daughter's been sharing research with me about the health issues of brachycephalic cats. Is that how you say it? Brachycephalic cats.
Depending on what country you're from, I guess.
Okay. I admit I knew they had some issues with their eyes. Oh, back to eyes, which makes sense. But according to one study she sent me, they are at risk of more serious things, kidney disease, for instance. I'm feeling fairly persuaded to give up my passion, but I don't understand the link between those gorgeous flat faces and major diseases.
The link is the genetics, of course. So we have pretty much altered the genes of cats in general and dogs. We just talked about basset hounds to make them look a particular way, right, over time. So we want cats to look like, with that round head. Dogs too. Brachycephalic means that they have short noses. And so we want them to have the big eyes and the round head and kind of look like a baby. I think that that's the idea that makes them more endearing, maybe makes us love them more. I don't know. But they have, because we've had to select for those different types of things, we've neglected the health as far as selecting for various health traits. So in breeding these animals to enhance those particular traits that make them look a particular way, then we've also ended up with other things. And so we're dealing with the expression of those genes over time causing disease. So in the Persian cat, we have problems with, they're predisposed to problems with their skin, problems with heart disease, hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, other immune-mediated diseases. Sometimes they actually are more prone to be infected by toxoplasmosis, so it must be an immune system issue. Entropion, which is rolling in of the eyelids. Those are just a few things I can think of. And that is because we have fooled with their genetics. So they're expressing those genes, and it's causing problems. That doesn't mean that we need to do away with the breeds. It might not be a bad idea to breed them back. And
it's my first thought. That's what we do on my planet. It's like, okay, hold on. Obviously, this didn't go right. Let's.
Yeah, but there are, you know, there are many people who really like that look, and some of those cats live a long time. So those are the ones who should be selected for. But that's not really what happens. You know, people breed them and sell the kittens, and then they.
All right,
don't hear
gonna,
back from them. You know, I'm they don't just, hear back. They don't follow the follow-up kittens and
right, but
all
I'm,
of that.
I'm,
it is a problem.
I'm going to do a little bit of math here because this is also really a judgment call, and I'm just curious about your opinion, literally. No harm, no foul. But Ellen,
I may or may not give my opinion. You can ask away.
Okay. Ellen, Ellen has had some experience because she's had them since she was a girl, and we can tell just from the question that she has a daughter who is certainly old enough to read and to tell her not to do this again. So I'm saying that I'm saying that Ellen is probably not in Ellen's had some experience.
Yeah.
Given that she's had this experience and given that she calls it her passion, that she's really passionate about it, persuaded to give up my passion. Is that something, you know, is there stuff now, if you're aware of these things, should you give up your passion
aware
or,
of them,
or
you know
can
the
you
question
manage
to
them?
Ask the breeder, right? So you should be able to weed out who is a good breeder and who's watching for the things like heart disease. That would be a big thing, you know. Does the breeder know where their cats are going, and do they ask people to let them know if there's heart disease? Et cetera, because those are the things that are heartbreaking.
Right.
But if you're not expecting your cat to live to be 20, and, you know, that's okay, and you go to a veterinarian who is familiar, most veterinarians are, you just make them understand that what you want to do is as much preventive care and maybe diagnostics as you can in order to know what you're dealing with, then that is okay to go with a brachycephalic, a Persian cat. And they're absolutely beautiful, and they can have lovely temperaments, and that might be the kind of pet that you like.
Right, and I'm just wondering, is there a way, I think we've got another minute and a half left, so not enough for a question, but more for, is there a registered, quote, breeder? How do you find a breeder?
Yeah, that's really tough with cat breeders. Yeah. So I think that it really matters whether they have other people recommending them and whether they have good answers to all your questions. So you should be able to ask all of these questions. Just say, come up front, be up front and say, I love the look of a Persian cat. I don't want to be dealing with heart disease and potentially other genetic issues. And so, you know, are you following your cats as they go out? What has been the history? And if they have something vague to tell you, then I probably wouldn't necessarily go with that breeder. If they say, you know, I've been breeding for the last 30 years and this is what I'm seeing, then maybe I would be more likely to go with that breeder. But there's nobody who judges that. I mean, even with dogs, the American Kennel Club is not keeping track of the genetics, but they don't know who's a good breeder and who's not, as far as breeding animals that have already shown
issues,
the propensity to disease, or they know they have disease in the family.
Yep, and that's the thing. You know, it's not necessarily about having the quote, good housekeeping seal of approval as much as it is actually talking to whoever it's coming from and finding out what the story is and where they are. And, you know, I it's wonderful to rescue dogs, et cetera, off, you know, from random places off the internet, but it's really important to have some actual communication back and forth. And that's my public service announcement, which.
Yes.
You don't. You can endorse if you like, but we don't do controversy. We don't do, as they say, controversy here. So,
well, you know, I think that there's room in the world for dogs who are purebred and cats as well, and they just add interest and fun to our lives as long as we act as good stewards of those of the genetics.
And that's exactly what it is. You are being a steward of genetics, and it's a slightly different, dynamic, basically. And as usual, we're out of time. So I'm going to say thank you very much once again, Dr. Cannon. This has been Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice, 518-789-3440, millertonvet.com.